Hey there, you are listening to episode number 16 of Does Not Compute. Sean and I are both really excited about this episode and cannot wait to hear your thoughts on it. But before we get started, I want to give a quick shout out to this episode's sponsors. First up, we have Hired. Hired, as you know, is an awesome way to find a new job, whether you're a designer or a developer, looking for full-time or contract work. Hired partners with over 3,000 super cool companies in order to provide access to a bunch of job opportunities. These companies have positions all over North America and Europe, spread out over 13 of the major tech hubs across both those continents. It's completely free, and when you sign up at hired.com/doesnotcompute and find a new job, Hired pays you a $2,000 signing bonus. This is a really easy, really effective way to find a new job, and there's no risk. You'll get 5 or more interview requests per week, all with salary and equity listed up front, so you know which ones you want to pursue. And there are no obligations. In fact, there's a good chance you'll end up with an awesome new job along with that $2,000 thank you bonus from Hired. Remember to check them out at hired.com/doesnotcompute. You'll help support the show, and you'll become eligible for that awesome signing bonus when you find a new job. Our second sponsor today is Linode. You've probably heard of Linode. They let you deploy super fast SSD servers whenever you want in under a minute. These folks have been providing virtual cloud servers for a long time, and they offer a bunch of great plans starting at just $10 a month. You get to pick the Linux distribution, along with which of their 8 data centers you want your new machine to live at. Since these are full-on virtual machines, you have total control. You can run Docker containers, set up a VPN, run a private Git server for yourself or your company, or pretty much anything else you can dream up. As I said before, these servers are backed by SSD storage, but they're also running on host machines with Intel Xeon E5 processors connected to a 40 gigabit network. This is a real server-grade setup. If you head over to linode.com/doesnotcompute, that's linode.com, and sign up with the promo code they have listed there, they'll give you a $20 credit to get started. That's up to 2 free months of your own super-fast virtual private server. So take a look at linode.com/doesnotcompute, grab that promo code, and get signed up. You'll get $20 free and an awesome server to have some fun with.
It'd be like SpaceX having a successful launch and landing, and they just dismantle it and give it to people.
Here's one small bolt from this reusable rocket.
Thanks for backing us on Kickstarter. Now we got to build another one. Today was the second real try I've given Webpack.
Oh, when was the first one?
So I started it. I started with Vue CLI. I generated a project and went through his setup. And I don't advise that because his setup is... Now it's not that complicated now that I know how Webpack works. But when I first jumped into it, it was split. The config split across 3 different files. There's a production.
You're talking about the Vue CLI setup?
Yeah, I went into the template and was looking at how he has it set up.
I see.
Yeah, so he has it split across 3 files, one for production, one for dev, and one base that are shared things between the two. And that's great. But jumping into it without having known anything about Webpack really was a little bit much. And then I went to the Webpack docs, which did not help much either. I went through some of the tutorials, but the docs seemed really scattered to me. So I ended up finding something that Pete Hunt wrote. I think it was called Intro to Webpack, and I can throw that in the show notes. But his was a much more just broken down walkthrough of piece by piece, and that's what made it click for me.
Nice. So how are you liking it so far?
It's cool. I mean, I used Grunt for a long time, and I used Gulp for a while, and now I'm giving Webpack a shot because it seems pretty cool. I think I skipped the whole Browserify stage.
Well, I mean, these tools all have very subtle differences, right? Gulp can do a lot of things that you wouldn't necessarily need Browserify or Webpack for. And Grunt can do a lot of things that you wouldn't necessarily need those for. And then sometimes you will actually integrate one of those into Gulp or into Grunt. Like one of the recent projects I worked on, I have a Gulp file that handles all my stuff. And then one of the tasks actually runs Browserify. So it's like sometimes they interconnect with each other and sometimes you use them independently of each other. And it's all kind of interesting. And nuanced, I guess.
Yeah, it's just different. I mean, I see a lot of people across the internet saying how if you're not using Webpack, you're screwing up. Or, you know, similarly, I've seen a certain someone tweet, if you're not using ES6 or ES16, you're falling behind. And when I see stuff like that, I feel kind of tired. I look at it and I think to myself, that does not make me want to try that. I was on Twitter. I woke up really early this morning and I was on Twitter and I saw John Gold tweeting. I just thought to myself, you know, I'm going to give it a shot, because John's cool and he's talking about Webpack and all that stuff. So yeah, made me jump into it. And I guess my overall opinion, like I said before, it does the job fine. I mean, if what Webpack is what you're needing, you know, it works pretty fine. I see a lot of other people doing things like replacing the Rails asset pipeline. And that seems real messy. I don't know. I don't feel like there's a streamlined way to do that yet, but
yeah, I've actually tried that before with specifically in Rails, replacing the asset pipeline. And it always feels like I'm doing something kind of bad. Like in the way where, you know, if your parents find out, they would be a little bit disappointed in you. It feels dirty, right?
Right.
Is the project you're using then right now a fresh project, or are you integrating it into something that already exists?
Fresh project. So I have the advantage of being able to do whatever I want with it. I don't have to try to fit it into a system that already exists.
That's always really nice, especially when you're learning something new. It just makes it so much easier to reason about.
Yeah, definitely. I guess like when I Google about Webpack, I always see people writing about, well, you have to follow this tutorial and it'll make it make sense. Which to me is interesting that the thing is so powerful. It's such a great tool, you know, but the docs are, I've never really heard anyone say great things about the Webpack docs. And in my experience, once you're familiar with Webpack, they're okay. Like you might be able to pull things out of them, but when you're just jumping in, it's kind of overwhelming at first. But my favorite thing about Webpack so far isn't Webpack itself, but it's how I'm writing code because of Webpack, I guess. In the past, I haven't used modules a whole lot in my JavaScript, just because I've mainly worked on things like Rails, which has the asset pipeline, and there's different way of working with it. And I've done a couple of things with Node, you know, using modules, but my vast amount of experience isn't in that area. But, you know, when using Webpack, it specifically bundles everything into modules, right?
Right.
So you have to require everything specifically that you want. And the more that I was doing that, the more I found that I liked it. It's very explicit, right? And recently I've been working on more projects where more developers are touching the code at the same time. And I find that the more explicit things can get, that's almost better, because then it, you know, as a developer coming onto a project, you look at something like that where the modules, everything that you need for that file is required there. You know where everything's coming from, right? It's right there for you. It kind of answers a lot of questions.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit last episode, actually, with the ES6 stuff. But I think that is definitely one of my favorite things about ES6 is how it is very structured, and it makes you think about how you should break different files up and what should live where and how what separation of concerns really means for your app. I think that's one of the really, really great things that has come out of ES6. And it, for me, it just makes it so much, I think about it more, but I have to focus on it less, if that makes sense. Like, I am spending less time thinking, oh, should I do it this way or that way? And more time just thinking, okay, for my app, how does this thing actually work? And then implementing it. It kind of shifts the mental load off of you in certain ways, which I think is really very great.
Right. And I know we've talked about in the past, especially when you're working with teams of people, having conventions saves a lot of headache down the road. And I feel like throwing modules into the mix, especially, you know, where we've been doing a lot more kind of single page application style things, throwing modules into the mix, it just makes things so much more explicit, direct. Everything has a purpose for being there, right? And like I said, in the past with a lot of Rails apps, you kind of get used to everything just kind of being available in the global space, I guess. But I don't know. I really like the feel of having things being deliberate and specific.
Right. Your imports mean something, and they're there for a very, very clear reason. Of course, only if they're named well. But that's part of using these tools, right, is making sure that you're naming stuff well.
Right, yeah. And it was, you know, after I set it up, I think the config ended up being 39 lines long. And so I had loaders for CoffeeScript and SAS and a URL loader for images. And, you know, after I knew how everything worked together, it made perfect sense. It was fine. I just think the point to, or the path to get there was more difficult than it needed to be. And I don't know if that's an issue with docs or maybe it's just something that's complex. Maybe it is what it is, you know?
I feel like that's kind of my whole problem with modern JavaScript in a way, right? Where the time to get set up is much longer than you would really like. And that's not a huge problem once you're used to a given tool. Like, obviously, you'll get faster because you and I have both been developing for years and years, and we're both used to figuring these things out, and we're used to things being slower and then ramping up pretty quickly. But I think what actually concerns me the most is the trajectory overall of the language. It doesn't seem ideal. It seems to be kind of going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot recently, actually. And a lot, like, I know we've talked about ES6 in a previous episode, and I know you and I have talked about this a lot off the air. And we kind of always come to the conclusion that, yeah, there's some forward progress being made, but it feels so much more overcomplicated. Like, it's more complicated than it needs to be. You know, I don't know if it's because I can remember that period of time when you didn't have to transpile everything and you didn't have to worry about immutable data structures and you didn't have to worry about managing state and all that, you know?
And those things definitely can make your life easier, but they don't necessarily. And I think that's kind of a subtle distinction, but I do think it is an important one.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. I just kind of go back and forth. Like, yeah, I'm trying to be really optimistic about everything. Like, there's so much forward progress and it's moving so quickly. And I try to be optimistic about the tooling that we have because there's some really cool stuff happening. You know, the React dev tools and the Vue dev tools. I was using Vue all day today working on a single page app and the dev tools were amazing.
Vue is great and you should use it.
Yeah, it was pretty great. I'm using Vue and Vue Router and Vue Resource for this.
Nice. That's a good stack.
Yeah, with the Rails API happening on the background.
Very cool.
So it's been great, but you know, like, I'm trying to be really optimistic about these sort of tools and not try to get bogged down so much, but it's really difficult to keep that mindset.
Right, and kind of one of the big things for me is that adding language features is almost never the answer if you have a problem with your language. Like JavaScript, I think everybody would agree, even the most, hey, JavaScript is the best kind of person would agree that JavaScript has some problems. And I can't think of a single language personally where they said, okay, we have some clear, really kind of deep-rooted problems in this language, in this community, and how we build things. And if we just add these 5 or 10 features to our language, then it'll all be fine. That's generally not how this works. Usually what happens is they say, oh, we'll just add these 5 or 10 features, and they add those, and people are like, well, that kind of uncovered 30 more problems. And then they add more features on top of them, and more, and you have this gigantic convoluted mess. And that is one major concern that I have with JavaScript right now, is that we're headed in that sort of direction.
I think part of it, too, is that there's so many hands in the pot right now. There's so many large companies that are making these things for themselves that might solve a lot of their problems. And they have such a big voice that they're releasing this stuff and it gets adopted by everyone else. It kind of trickles down, right? It makes me feel like to do something efficiently or to make a JS app right, I have to use all these really complicated tools that are coming down from really big companies.
I could not agree with that more. And I want to emphasize that the problem that I see with that is not that it's tough for you and I and people who have been writing JavaScript and programming computers for a very long time. The biggest problem I actually see with that is not a language problem. The biggest problem I see is that it is becoming so difficult to get started. And I don't mean get started on a single project. I mean get started as a software developer. The internet is powered by lots of extraordinarily terrible code, but the fact that anybody could jump in and start making something, even if they had no clue how to write code, that has historically been kind of one of the things that makes the internet so special and so powerful and what it is. And seeing that kind of get lost is very, very concerning to me.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day too. I have a couple people that I'm working with teaching programming and web development and all that. And they're to the point now where they can code up a PSD design into HTML and CSS. And so I'm thinking, how do I even get started introducing them to JavaScript?
Right.
I think for me, the answer is teach them how I learned and take them almost like a time machine, I guess. Like go back in time. Like now I have a little bit more knowledge, so I can kind of steer them away from certain things or things that I did that I shouldn't have been doing and had to break a habit, I guess. But I just don't feel like I could throw somebody into all of the modern tools and think that it would end okay anytime soon.
Absolutely. This is something that I see all of the time, both with people that I know in real life and also people that I know through the various Slacks that I'm involved with. There are a lot of people who are so, so interested in code. And I think many of them for the right reasons, like because they think it's actually interesting, not because they want to get rich quick or something ridiculous like that. But these people come in and they're so excited. And then there's just kind of a tidal wave of stuff that they have to know before they can even make anything cool. And that's so, so intimidating. And I see these people who start off really, really happy, really excited. They get a day in and they're like, okay, well, I wasn't really expecting all this. And they get a week in and they're like, there's no way I can do this. And then they quit. And that makes me really sad and also kind of nervous for the future.
At some point, I try to keep it in my mind that what we do is not easy. It's pretty difficult. Programming is not necessarily easy either. I try to remember when I first learned how to play guitar and remember that feeling of frustration. Like I would get like a chord book and I would try to form, like put my fingers in the shape of a chord and they just wouldn't stay. Or, you know, when I'm learning scales or something and I'd play a scale right three times and the fourth time I would screw up for no reason, you know. I just try to keep that in the back of my mind, I guess, when I'm thinking about the state of development. And I guess that helps me sometimes, but I think where most of it weighs down on me is partly the community and a lot of the negative. Like, so you'll see a lot of people talking about these cool tools are coming out, and then you'll see a lot of negative posts about the same things. It's kind of confusing almost, right? When you're trying to research and learn new things, and it's like, well, what is correct? So this person hates this tool and thinks this is trash. This person thinks this tool is awesome. What should I do?
It's all very difficult. And I don't want to make this a political podcast or anything like that, but I think there's actually a pretty important socioeconomic component to consider in that things being this much harder actually mean that people feel like or actually have to go to college or boot camps. And those are very expensive things, especially boot camps. Like, they can definitely help skill you up in a very short amount of time. But if that's what you have to do, if it's between that and going to college, that's a little bit concerning to me, especially because the tech industry overall still really struggles with diversity. And so when we put up these barriers, it's not just a barrier in the learning sense. It's not just like, oh, you need to spend more time figuring this stuff out. But it also actually actively prevents people who do not already fit into that mold of, hey, I have money and time, I'm going to be a programmer. And it excludes them actively. That's really not good, because that's something that we already struggle with as an industry and something that we should be really concerned about and actively working to improve. And then we're making these tools where we think their only impact is in the browser, but it actually spills out into real life and affects things in this kind of powerful and scary way.
Yeah, I guess I haven't ever really thought about it like that either. I know that recently someone that is close to me graduated from a, I don't even know what to call it. I guess it was kind of a boot camp type thing. But basically, the city had gotten a grant from the government to put on this code school type thing. And I believe they used treehouse.com videos. And so it was a few nights a week, they would go and meet with mentors and they would work through these videos. And at the end of it, you get a certificate. And at the end of it, you know, they did a really great job and they finished this thing. But the certificate that they have, you know, it might qualify them for like very, 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 very junior stuff, you know? So it's been maybe 6 months since then, and I'm still working with this person and she's learning a lot. She's growing really quickly, but I'm thinking, you know, these people are getting certificates with the promise that they're going to be able to find work because there's so many jobs. When in reality, they get this certificate and they go look for a job, and then all these employers are expecting them to know these fancy new tools and techniques. And in reality, it's still a long ways off from where they're at.
This stuff is complicated, and expecting people to be able to learn it in an extremely short amount of time, some people can do that, but not all people can do that. And that doesn't mean that they're a less good programmer, and it doesn't mean anything about them. It just means that this stuff is actually hard, which if you're listening to this and you're a developer who has a job right now, you should be very happy I'm saying that, because that's job security for you. But at the same time, raising these barriers is only hurting us as a community in the long run. JavaScript is so popular. It's easily the most popular language in the entire world. Part of what made it that popular to begin with is just how approachable it was. And I really do worry that we're losing that in a lot of ways.
It's kind of like a point that I made earlier, you know, like adding more structure into this makes it easier for me to work with other developers on the same project. And at some point that's necessary for my job because I need to be efficient, right? And I need to make sure that things aren't really buggy because people are doing the implementing patterns differently. But at the same point, that really raises the barrier to entry.
Right. And I don't have any problem with structure. I don't have any problem with a build phase in your project. That's not what I'm trying to get at here. I think that just overall, some of the practices and some of the directions that we're headed in as an industry, as a group, as a community, are not great and do kind of raise these barriers in ways that they shouldn't necessarily be raised. I started programming when I was 9 years old. I made my first website then. I made it in Notepad. And it was the word. I mean, obviously, there's not even syntax highlighting in Notepad. But when I was 9 years old, it was the most amazing thing in the world to me. And I thought I could never be a programmer. Being a programmer sounded absolutely impossible. But making a website was totally something I could teach myself. And that was incredibly, incredibly empowering as a child. And I imagine to anyone who's just starting out, like that thought of, oh, wow, I can make this screen show stuff that I want it to show. That's kind of amazing. And the loss of front end as that sort of, I guess, gateway drug really scares me, because we're never going to get these people who are incredibly talented, incredibly smart, making the best software in the world kind of engineers, unless we have those kids who feel like they're a superhero because they can make a hell of a world.
I think a lot of that is due to the attitude towards code that isn't written to what the current popular trend is. So, you know, me, if I were a 9 year old and I were to write something that I thought was awesome and I shared it with some people, they'd be like, well, why aren't you using this? Or you should have done that instead. And a lot of that comes across as being really condescending. To me anyway. And that would certainly discourage me if I was younger, you know?
Yeah, this is something where I want the community to definitely come together and support each other, especially newer people, because they need it the most. But also, just think about when you're making a tool, think about how accessible it is. And people always use accessibility in terms of like, oh, there are disabled users or something, which of course is extremely important. And we've talked about that before on the show. But I think accessibility can mean a lot of different things. In this case, accessibility meaning accessibility to people who aren't already in the know about development.
Right. That's a pretty good way to put it. People that aren't already in the know. I'm pretty sure I read a tweet last week that was talking about that. I can't remember who said it, but it was something along the lines of, you know, to all the people that are, you know, complaining that this stuff is too difficult, have you ever tried to build something more difficult than a to-do app before? And I thought that was an interesting statement, right? Yeah, there's a lot of people that complain that it's difficult. It is difficult, but you know, what do you expect from them?
Right. Like, if it weren't difficult, you would be making much less money. So that's kind of a weird thing to complain about, first of all. And secondly, the act of making a to-do app is kind of an amazing thing. Even in this day and age, like somebody who goes from not knowing anything about computer programming to making a to-do app in JavaScript, that is one of the most impressive things in the world to me.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of tutorials just have you copy and paste stuff, which doesn't really do much in terms of memory, like retention and being able to explain what you just did.
Well, sure. But I guess I'm talking about more people who take that knowledge and internalize it. And I feel like that's fairly easy to tell the difference between somebody who just copy pastes examples and somebody who really does care and is excited, even if their code isn't perfect yet, because whose code is perfect? Thanks again to our sponsors for this week. Linode helps you get super awesome, super fast SSD servers live, super quick, for as little as $10 per month. You get complete control over your virtual server, so you can set it up however you need. They make it really easy to get started and also have some great add-on services like backups, node balancers to help you scale, and Longview, which makes it super easy to keep an eye on your server health. When you sign up using the code listed at linode.com/doesnotcompute, you'll get $20 of credit applied to your account. Our second sponsor, Hired, makes it so much easier for you to find your next job in development or design. Once you sign up, Hired helps connect you with great companies from a bunch of the major tech hubs in Europe and North America. You'll get up to 5 job offers per week, and all of them will have salary and equity listed up front. If you sign up at hired.com/doesnotcompute, Hired will give you a $2,000 thank you bonus once you've landed that sweet new job. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode, and if you have a minute, please remember to give Does Not Compute a rating or review in the iTunes store. It's incredibly helpful and truly appreciated.